From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. It's a sad time at WXXI. As you probably heard, the longtime talk show host Bob Smith passed away after a long illness. We lost him this week, and we're going to close this podcast with a remembrance of Bob coming up here. But let me just say a few words. Bob set a high standard for show preparation, and his legacy will continue in that regard. When I took the job, a lot of Bob's listeners warned me that no one could reach that standard. I mean, sometimes Bob would read an entire book in one night, and he treated his guests with respect. And one way to respect them is to be ready to discuss their work. I can't say I've ever reached his standard, but his habits have left a blueprint, and this community will always be in Bob's debt for that. So as I said, more on Bob later in this podcast, but let's start with the conversation about the latest travel ban from Donald Trump's administration.
We learned all about Nowruz, the Persian holiday and festival that celebrates the arrival of spring. It's next Tuesday, and it's a big day for Iranians in particular. But many people of Iranian descent in the Rochester area have canceled flights and decided to stay put because they worry about getting back to the United States if they leave. One of them is Zeri Kamerhe, the director of the science libraries at the University of Rochester.
Personally, I would not be able to visit my family, neither my family would be able to visit me. But I had plans, some family members in Europe and even in Canada. Since they're still not citizens, they need to get visas to come to the United States to visit us, and their plans are up in the air. And so it's not just from Iran, but Persians all over the world have the same problem. My heart breaks for our Iranian students who are here. And the first night that there was news about this ban, I was invited by one of the Iranian students on our campus in University of Rochester. And I believe the entire Iranian student group that were in that dinner together, they were really concerned and sad. One of them, her husband has been away for a while and is not able to get a visa to come over here, and she's a graduate student. So it has impacted the Iranian student community. It has impacted the Iranian American community. But I believe even more than the Iranian American community, it has impacted the Iranian students who are here on visa, and they're basically caught in this political situation. This reminds me of the 1980s, right after the revolution, and when the Iran-Iraq war happened and the hostage crisis was happening. And I remember I was caught in that same situation where I didn't see my family for 10 years. I was a single woman in this country. By the time my parents and my family got to see me, I was married and I had two children. The entire time, they did not get to see me. And these political situations from both sides, not just in the United States, but the political situation in Iran as well, the statements they make, it impacts normal people like myself who have nothing to do with politics and we're just working and making a living and we want to have a peaceful life and all we expect is to visit family.
Next, we turn to a discussion on the Raise the Age campaign. Raise the Age refers to the age of criminal adult responsibility. 48 states have raised the age of adult responsibility to 18. In other words, for most nonviolent offenses, people who are 16 or 17 years old will not be tried as adults. North Carolina and New York are the last two states that still try 16-year-olds as adults, even for nonviolent offenses.
So in this clip, we'll listen to Jerry Ingram, a youth minister at the First Unitarian Church in Rochester. He tells the story of how he and his cousin were arrested together, but one was tried as an adult, one was not.
During my younger years, growing up in the inner city in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, which is in Broward County, South Florida, and then parts of Miami, which is in Dade County, you are your environment. And at the time, being a teenage, what they call an African-American man, although I identify myself as just a black American male, but yeah, that's another story. But growing up in that environment, we decided, hey, you know, the school thing is not working. Quick way to make a buck. We're poor, you know, family, you know, the situation at home is totally different from you know, our white peers that we're going to school with out in the suburban schools and in suburban areas and stuff. And we felt that, you know, selling drugs was a way out, a way to provide for your family. It was a quick buck, and hey, you were not, you know, putting a gun to somebody's head. So we decided, hey, we'll sell drugs. And, you know, I found that at a very young age that I wasn't good at it, but, you know, we tried it and we ended up getting caught. And, you know, I was 17. He's 16. And
your cousin?
My cousin, yeah. He was actually 16. I was 17. And, you know, we go to court and we go through, you know, the procedure, how they, you know, take you through and all the rundown and things. And so he ended up actually getting weighed over as an adult. And so now the conditions of his arrest become even more difficult now.
Did he have a different judge? Because I'm trying to understand exactly, you know, did you do different things? Was there any violence involved? What happened?
We had the same charge. You know, we were selling drugs outside of our apartment where we lived. It just happened to be a school down the road, which is considered another violation if you are in a perimeter of a school district or area. I think it's like 1,000 yards away you have to be, or something, feet or something. But anyway, no, we had the same judge, same, you know, criteria as far as the arrest. And just somehow, you know, like we say, some are fortunate, others are less fortunate. I just happened to be one of those ones that was fortunate to get my case sent down to family court.
And he was tried as an adult?
And he was tried as an adult.
And you still don't know why?
Don't know why.
Wow. Okay.
Don't know why.
And then what happens to the two of you?
Well, I mean, it set us on different paths. So instead of taking the 6 years, he took a plea, and they gave him 3 years. Me, and just did a little time in the county, not county, the juvenile system, whatever. And I got out, started slowly changing my life around.
Did that shake you up? I mean, do you remember what you were thinking as a 17-year-old watching your cousin in the adult system and you had a different situation? Were you thinking about that at the time?
At the time, I was, because we were always aware of the possibility of being housed with adults, adult men. The thing about that is, you know, you either become prey or you become a predator, and it causes you in your mind frame and your mindset to be different. And so now you look at people with a different mindset, and it can be in a way to where there's bitterness there. You feel inferior to that person. So in order to make yourself feel like a certain way, or feel like you're getting back at society for the pain they've caused you. And so when you house teenagers with hardened criminals who's, you know, 30 years to life, who's, you know, never going to see the light of day, and this 17 or 16-year-old, he only has 5 years, but he's still with this hardened criminal, it shapes his mindset. You know what I mean? And so when he got out, man, I mean, it's like he was in and out. You know what I mean? Our lives went in total different directions. You know, I went on and, you know, got my education and married and became a minister and, you know, done a lot of wonderful things that I've been fortunate, you know, to be able to do. Why his life has been in reverse, you know? And I've talked with him throughout the years, and it was clear to me that when he was in there with the, when he was in prison for those 3 years, being around that type of environment caused him to look at life and people in a total different aspect. You know what I mean? Like, it just fundamentally, it was not clicking anymore. The reality of being a conscious being as far as having compassion or considerate of others. You know what I mean? Like, that was out the window now. And it was, you know, just hard. Like, his heart had become hardened.
Now let's turn to a fascinating moment that came up during a discussion about teaching the teachers. Each year, SUNY Geneseo hosts Teachers Day. They welcome 50 middle and high school history teachers. Their goal is to improve teaching techniques and make sure that the material they're teaching is accurate.
For example, this year, one of the seminars was about the causes of the Civil War. Let's listen to 7th grade American history teacher Sarah Prinzi explain how she benefited from Teachers Day and how it convinced her to change a specific lesson.
So often teachers are overwhelmed with their responsibilities when they get in the classroom that I think sometimes it's really easy to just take the textbook at its word. And every single year I learn something at this workshop, multiple things at this workshop that are debunking myths or setting the record straight or bringing further anecdotes to make history more alive for the kids.
Can you think of any myths that were debunked?
Oh, yes. One of the ones that I almost felt like a little bit of an embarrassing slap in the face because I had taught it the week before was the myth of Quetzalcoatl, which I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's kind of a far-off thing.
What's the myth? Go ahead.
The myth is that the Native Americans believed that they had a legend that a white god was going to come across the Atlantic Ocean in a houseboat and rule them one day and bring peace. Well, it turns out through more recent research, I found out the myth of Quetzalcoatl was actually more likely the Native Americans being a little bit snarky. And again, as you said earlier, the people who wrote the history that we're reading are the explorers, and they read into the Native Americans supposedly, you know, being very accommodating as you must worship us, when actually what it was is maybe they were actually mocking the explorers, and that myth wasn't true.
And the way the history that you were taught and then subsequently taught yourself,
yes,
made the conquerors feel a little bit better about themselves.
It definitely
softened
did.
The edges of the history.
Yes, it did.
And you had taught that the week before?
Yes.
No, it's okay. This is fascinating. No, and I actually really admire you for talking about this.
Well,
so,
thank you.
So then what do? Do you go back to class and say, look, we got to revisit this?
Yep.
You did.
I said, oops, guess what, kids? I'm wrong. Remember that I told you last week? Just found out. Thank you, my former professors, for clearing that up for me. And the kids thought it was hilarious. And I probably remembered it even more because here's your teacher making a mistake and admitting it.
And, I hope admiring you for admitting it.
Aw.
And then grabbing that lesson, and you're right, probably.
You're making me blush a little
remembering
bit.
Remembering it even more. But does that worry you, though, as a teacher, that if you got the story of Quetzalcoatl wrong, what else is there that we are teaching the teachers about? What else is in the textbooks that is designed to make us feel a little bit better about ourselves, but maybe isn't historically accurate? Do you worry about that?
Oh, all the time. All the time. And to go back to talking about Civil War history, when I'm maybe touching on it a little bit, but a little bit off, is the Haitian Rebellion. And that is something that was skipped over. That's my understanding is that's the only successful slave rebellion in history. Why don't we talk about that? Well, because Jefferson was president at the time. He didn't want us to talk about that. And so I feel like we're trying to kind of overcome that suppression of that major historical event.
In a couple of weeks, the Fast Forward Film Festival will bring 5-minute films with an environmental bent to the Little Theater. We met some of the filmmakers, including some high school and college students.
The discussion turned to whether their generation is more engaged on climate change and the environment. They think it is, and they gave us some insight into why. This clip starts with Eleanor Barrera, who is 17 years old. Then you'll hear RIT student Ben Doran.
So my sister just came back from China, and she was showing me all these pictures, and in a lot of her pictures, she was wearing the mask. So I sort of took that and, like, it is happening now. You think of the environment, you think of it as something in the future. But I don't know. I think our generation is, I want to say we're ready to take it on. And I think festivals like this help us do that, because when I went to the inspiration session, my ideas were respected, and it was just like a new feeling for me, and people were talking to me about the environment, and that had never occurred before.
What you said about your sister is very interesting, in that I think there's a lot of wisdom in what Eleanor just said there. Sometimes we think about the environment and it's just too big for us. We always think it's generations in the future, it's somebody else's problem, it's 100, 500, 1,000, 10,000 years down the line. What Eleanor is saying is her generation is seeing impacts now, so maybe more mobilized now. And maybe the human condition needs that. Maybe the human brain, it's hard to get around beyond your own lifetime. But maybe for your generation, you no longer view it as beyond your own lifetime.
Like, I feel like we're telling adults a lot of the things about this stuff. Because we're, like you were saying with your sister and stuff, like, we're seeing it firsthand and being like, this shouldn't be this way, right? Like, many adults are so used to how it is and how it's slowly been.
I mean, you're an adult, by the way, Ben.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm still.
You mean
in
older adults? But
yeah,
okay.
Older adults. Yeah, okay. Older people. Yeah. You know, they're so used to seeing this gradually happen that it's kind of numb to them. And so we're being like, well, it shouldn't be like foggy 24/7. I shouldn't have to wear a mask outside, right?
This is not okay.
Yeah, this is not okay. And I think even, I hate to bring up social media, but because it gets brought up way too much, but we see so much and it gets to us so quickly that it doesn't go through any filters. And it's one of those things that it'll end up at us and it kind of affects us. I mean, if you see, like, I've seen pictures of the smog in China and stuff like that, and it's absolutely ridiculous. And it's one of those things that someone takes a picture and sends it right to me. I don't have to go to China to even see that.
We'll close this podcast as we promised with a tip of the hat in gratitude to Bob Smith. He hosted 1370 Connection for 25 years. Bob passed away this week after a long illness. Here he is in 2013 after the stroke that took him off the air. He was talking to our colleague, Gene Fisher.
My dad originally needed me to help out with the family business, and he wanted to see if I'd be interested to come back to Rochester to help him out. And so I did, because I had fallen out of love with commercial radio. I couldn't see myself as being on the same station with Rush Limbaugh anyway.
What do you think was happening in commercial radio that generated the rise of people like Rush Limbaugh?
A lot of stations wanted to have an adult radio-oriented format that would be personality-driven, and that they thought that would be the best way to go. And actually, it did work very well for a lot of stations for quite a bit. But at the same time, it has a tendency to wear out. And you need something that will be high energy, that will be attractive, but at the same time, will bring in people and sort of reach out to be a welcoming format for listeners and won't be a turnoff.
Did you see that as a possibility with WXXI?
That's what I thought sure was going to happen, and I think it worked extremely well. I thought it was an approach to bring people in, to sort of engage people, get them involved, become a place that people can tune in and take part, and I think that's one thing was XXI's strength, that I was trying to bring it out.
Bob's work and his standards will continue to inspire us on Connections, and that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can listen to Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on AM 1370, 88.5 WRUR FM. Did I do that right? Limping to the finish line here. And Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS, it's 89.5 FM.
We're also on the WXXI mobile app. Happy Friday, everybody, and have a great weekend.